Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Coming up on a minute and a half past the hour, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. It is the 25th day of April, 2017. Yes, of course this program is live. Well, I mean, if you're listening right now, I mean, well, I mean, there are philosophical and metaphysical considerations. Oh, never mind. This program is live for the 25th day of April, 2017. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room. Just click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into the multimedia real-time wacky, zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. The Titanic Tuesday poster has already been put up in the room. You'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Jug of Punch and VT Blom and longtime and veteran indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. By the way, for those of you with Java chat problems, Firefox ESR 32-bit will run the chat room, just in case you were wondering. Thank you very kindly, Steve in New York, for letting me know that all switches are flipped on TuneIn, the program, oh, for God's sakes, it's going to be one of those nights. Is reaching. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is a listener-supported broadcast effort. Not a lot of support in the last couple of days, but thanks very kindly to those who did. Thank you, Paul, for jumping in earlier, about an hour and a half ago. And thank you to our one lone subscriber for this 25th day of the month. I told you that end of the month is a thin time for subscriptions. If you'd like to help us keep the program on the air, because this is the only thing that keeps the program on the air, I mean, well, you know, except that big old check I get from the DNC every month. Except that doesn't exist. Yeah, well, except in the minds of, you know, people who holler things like, neoliberal! Right, yeah. No, listener support is the only thing that keeps us on the air. And thanks to our one lone subscriber on the 25th of the month, and thanks to Paul. What was a $410 deficit is now merely $385, so thank you very kindly. That's what we need to raise this evening to finally get even with the week before we hit the middle of the week. This is, of course, the last broadcast week of April, and if we want to lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky, we need to finish in a timely fashion as the month comes to an end. So that means during this the remainder of this week, we've got something, let's say, $985 to raise between now and Friday, but only $385 to raise this evening. So one at $385, and I'm done after that. So if you'd like to help out, go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on Contribute. If you would like for our one lonely subscription and check the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation and get to the next screen. And our one lonely subscriber for this day of the month will have some company. If you don't want to do that, just help out however you can. Mr. Soros! Yeah, really. I know the messages are getting through. They got to be. Yeah, you just put about $10,000 in check to make this a recurring monthly donation, and everybody else can get a break because, see, the rest of the Horn Family Community Congregation has been carrying you on their backs in terms of progressive broadcasting for 12 freaking years, and it's about time that limousine liberals like you ponied up, Mr. Soros. Yes. So if you that's the online method. If you want to use the U.S. Postal Service, some people do, and that's fine. Then the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And gosh, I hope we can knock down this 385 this evening, because if it's 585 tomorrow night, prayer meeting Wednesday. We're going to have to replace the carpets again, because I'm going to have to lock the doors, and well, I might not even make it to the cathedral, because I'll be down in the reverb well, hoping that Lassie will run and find Timmy, and we'll all be down there, because this is our community, and frankly, it's sad but true that a whole lot more people listen than support. No getting around it, but it right. It's a noteworthy day in history, courtesy of my friend Dr. Bob Bliss. A reminder today, this is the birthday of Guglielmo Marconi, born this day, April 25th, 1874, in Bologna, Italy. The second son of an Italian baron and an Irish mother. Mama was from the Jameson distilling family. The baron was just an Italian nobleman. And as Bob Bliss notes, Guglielmo Marconi, would have had to find something to do with his life other than collect the rents. The estates were in Romagna and Tuscany. He was raised Anglican, schooled in England. And somewhere along the way, Marconi became fascinated with the newly discovered, by a fellow named Heinrich Hertz, radio waves. And by the age of 20, Guglielmo Marconi had proven in December 1894 that radio waves could carry sound, human communication, speech. According to legend, when young 20-year-old Marconi showed his daddy that he could transmit something, as Bob Bliss says, quite insubstantial across equally insubstantial space wirelessly and receive it somewhere else, i.e. the next room in the house there, well, daddy opened his wallet, gave young Guglielmo all the money that was in it, and told him to go out into the world and develop the thing that he had discovered. And Guglielmo Marconi did exactly that and went on to become a Nobel Prize winner for what he had done in creating what we now know as radio. Now, there are no radio waves involved in this broadcast, but were it not for the electronic communications, the radio communications that Marconi discovered, we probably wouldn't be sitting here talking about packets passing. So, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Marconi. Thank you very much indeed. Now, of course, everyone knows who is a regular to the program that on Tuesdays, well, Tuesdays are Titanic Tuesdays. I'm sure they had a Marconi device there aboard the Titanic. It might have been the Marconi device that sent the message out. By the way, there are some icebergs floating distinctly further south than they should be, and full steam ahead. Because that's what Titanic Tuesday celebrate. Right-wing thought. The right-wing impulse to yell, full steam ahead, flank speed, give it all she's got. We'll show that iceberg when the iceberg comes into view. The story, of course, you know. It goes way back years ago now. When one of America's greatest unsung monotones, Steve, took a call from one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers, mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, who said to him, Steve, how come it is that there are seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I done see them in the mines. We ain't nowhere near the beach. And Steve monotonously replied, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic Cerise Jubilee cooking station there right at the table. Not on the table, but right at it. No word on that. No. So we celebrate Titanic right-wing intellect every Tuesday here at the Horn, and this 25th of April is no different. There are serious things to go into. There are less so. But when it comes to Titanic intellect, I mean, this is the kind of Titanic intellect that you, if there were a Titanic right-wing intellect section of the Smithsonian Museum of American Culture, or whatever it is, this would go in it. There is a move afoot in this country to finally, day late, dollar short, do something with the numerous memorials to racists, bigots, lynchers, white supremacists in various and sundry cities. Take, for instance, the following audio. You're going to love this. Now, this happens in the middle of the night, sometime after midnight. It's down in New Orleans, and the area is all lit up. There's a construction crew working, and for some reason or another, it is necessary to have several members of the New Orleans Police Department on duty, you know, standing by. Gee, I wonder why. Maybe because of this guy.
Middle of the night,
no hits.
Nobody knows who's paying for it. There's tape on all the things. Everybody's face is covered. This is America. This is the country you want to live in.
Amen, brother.
Whether you agree with it or not, this is communism. This is what they did pre-World War II. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, yellow, red. It might be this monument today, but what's tomorrow?
This is America. This is communism.
What's the reason for freedom in history? What's the reason for anything that we've got in this country if we can't stand behind it? If you're not man enough to come in broad daylight and do something that no one agrees with, but you're willing to cover it up with tape, construction paper, who's paying for it?
No transparency.
Where's a permit? Where's a work permit? Can we see a permit? Just show a permit. Show something. Any transparency. But you can't.
Now what, you might ask, the hell is that? Well, what that is audio of, I guess one of those people with terrible, terrible, terrible economic anxiety. Down in New Orleans, Louisiana, as they removed a monument to the 1876, not 1865, not 1861, didn't happen during the Civil War. It happened instead in the aftermath of the Civil War when white folks tried to raise an insurrection. Well, they didn't try. They raised an insurrection against the government because the government was trying to actually treat freed slaves like human beings. And this is an obelisk, maybe 10, 20 feet high, that they called the Liberty Monument. No, really, the Liberty Monument, dedicated to the idea that, you know, black people, former slaves, shouldn't have any, you know, liberty. The inscription, and this was this was sent to me by our buddy Matt Osborne, who posted the very same thing that you just heard here over on the Horn Facebook group page. It's a closed group. That way no wingnut POSs can get in or anything like that. But the the inscription on the at the base of the racism monument reads, "United States troops took over the state government and reinstated the usurpers. But the national election, November 1876, recognized white supremacy in the South and gave us our state." That's what monument was dedicated to. No, really. It was dedicated to an insurrection against civil rights for freed slaves. There are four similar monuments that are going to be going away in New Orleans. Another one to one to Jefferson Davis, you know, for whom our attorney general was named. Another one to Robert E. Lee, treasonous dishonorer of his military obligations, and of course Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard, for whom our sitting attorney general was also named. They have to be moved at unstated times and in secret because of the incredibly high numbers of people with economic anxiety who just also happen to be, you know, racists and might attempt to do violence to preserve monuments to people who supported slavery, fought to perpetuate slavery, and celebrated the ongoing violation of American citizens' civil rights. Got it? Yeah. Mayor Mitch Landrieu, and I'm sure somebody out there is on, neoliberal! Mayor Mitch Landrieu of New Orleans said the memorials don't represent his city as it approaches its 300th anniversary next year. He said the city would remove the monuments, store them, and preserve them until an appropriate place to display them is determined. I suggest displaying them at the bottom of Lake Pontchartrain. And all the little wingnuts can jump right in and go celebrate their heritage. Hopefully they will do so without diving devices. So how do these monuments get there? Well, the Liberty Monument, which the guy was shrieking about, was erected in New Orleans in 1891. And it was installed entirely by virtue of monies raised by the Crescent City White League. These were your racists who knew which fork to use with the oysters Bienville. Yes, not your white trash clan, but your city fathers. You understand? As Matt Osborne points out, the majority of the people who live in New Orleans, despite the best efforts of various and sundry authorities, and in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, are the majority of the residents of New Orleans are black, as is a majority of the city council. The aggrieved white privilege folks put together a group called the Monumental Task Committee, and they tried to sue to keep the monuments from being removed. But they lost. And thus, this most hateful monument to slavery, to racism, to the abrogation of civil rights, has gone away. But not before at least one titanic intellect could show up, as you heard.
Amen, brother. Whether you agree with it or not, this is communism. This is what they did pre-World War II.
History major. This is communism. Taking down a monument to the deliberate assault, the deliberate suppression of people's constitutional rights, it's communism. It's what they did pre-World War II. Not sure what it was about after World War II that made maybe Jim Bob here has a higher opinion of your post-World War II commies, but he definitely doesn't like the pre-World War II commies because they must have taken down memorials to suppressing the civil rights of, oh, Jesus. Makes your head hurt just trying to follow the thought process. Where's the transparency? Well, dumbass, you're allowed to be there. You're there at 2 o'clock in the morning. Why they got to do it in the middle of the night? Ooh, because it's in a public place, and maybe it's easier to impede the flow of traffic in the middle of the night than it is in the middle of the day, because traffic in New Orleans is still kind of a pain in the ass because it's an old city and there's all kinds of narrow little streets and shit like that. As Matt Osborne points out, his injured, fragile whiteness is palpable as he demands a safe space for symbols of white supremacy. They are some special snowflakes, aren't they? They certainly are. So, treasonous old Bobby Lee will be coming down. treasonous old Jefferson Davis will be coming down, and treasonous old P.G.T. Beauregard, the man who ordered the first shots fired of the Civil War. His statue will be going. You know, why not? Why do they need to be out in public? Why not put them in a museum? Put them in a museum and put all of this shit in one room. Here's the museum room dedicated to monuments to people who wanted to perpetuate the evils of slavery. Problem solved. Except not really. I mean, it wouldn't. Yeah, you get the idea. And with that, that takes us to, you may recall him from a week or so past, Virginia gubernatorial Republican gubernatorial primary candidate, Corey Stewart. Except when you pronounce Corey Stewart, you'd probably be better off pronouncing it Corey Stewart. Corey Stewart, or Corey Stewart, is still terribly wrought and wroth and upset even. Because a move is afoot to remove a statue of sainted old Bobby Lee from the general area of Richmond, Virginia, which Bobby was so good at defending that Richmond spontaneously combusted and just burnt down all by itself while he was still defending it. No. He gave up Richmond. Yeah, burn it down, boys. I'll be leaving now. But Corey Stewart is terribly, terribly upset. He's so upset that he took to the Twitter and he tweeted the following. Just as a general warning, you might want to grab a hockey puck if you've got one handy. Get a nice bite. Nothing, no funny accents. I want you to get the full import of this. Nothing is worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. Let's do that again. Nothing is worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. Maybe Corey Stewart had already heard about the monumental massacre down in the Big Easy, down in the Crescent City, down in NOLA. And maybe he sees the worm turning as the cranes come for old Bobby Lee. Of course, folks could just pull it down and have old Bobby Lee shatter in the streets like they did with Saddam Hussein. Would he like that better? But no, nothing is worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. I don't know. One, who the Southerner is that Corey Stewart's referring to. I'll explain that in a moment. But the idea that nothing is worse. You know what? I would say that slavery itself was worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner his monuments don't matter. The Holocaust was worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner his monuments don't matter. 9/11. 9/11, y'all. 9/11 was worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. The Oklahoma City bombing Yep, worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner his monuments don't matter. The Columbine Massacre. I'd say that was worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. We could probably stay at this for the next 3 hours. It could become an email thing. It could become a Twitter thing. It could become, who knows, it could, a Skype thing. A Facebook thing. I mean, I can make things kind of mild. In my book, me driving the 12-mile round trip up to the Wiggling Pig to get a carton of Breyer's chocolate ice cream, because for some reason or another I can handle that, and finding out that they don't have any is worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner his monuments don't matter. A couple of tens of millions of uninsured Americans. That's worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. Wouldn't you agree? Blowing a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl this past February is worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. A poor little greenie being delivered a cold cup of coffee by some bi-coastal elite establishment Democrat is worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. V.T. Blom, you've got a point there. The assassination of John Kennedy was worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner his monuments don't matter. The assassination of John Kennedy's brother Bobby was worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner his monuments don't matter. And yes, while the Southerner might disagree, the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was in fact worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, putting it all in perspective for us. White monuments matter, Bob. I guess that's really what it boils down to. Hi, Carol. But here's where it gets really, really fun. And I'm sure if he was handy, Brother Deacon Gerald would point out that Corey Stewart comes from an entirely different line of the House of Stewart, of which Brother Deacon Gerald is a member. Now, the way we say it around here in the hills is, I ain't no kinfolk of mine. Ain't no kin of mine. Ain't no kin of me. Mm-mm, no. So, Corey Stewart is a Republican candidate for the nomination to run for the office of governor in the Commonwealth of Old Virginia. Now, anybody who writes like that, you figure, I mean, if you take one of those little, like, diabetes lancets that I use to check my blood glucose and stuff, and many other people do as well, and you were to grab Corey Stewart's finger and you tick, and get that little drop of blood out there and you were sampling, you'd probably find the native soil of old Commonwealth of Old Virginia right there in amongst the corpuscles. Nope. Corey Allen Stewart will celebrate his 49th birthday this coming August the 1st. He was born August the 1st, 1968. Yeah, you ready for it? It's coming. Wait for it. In Duluth, Minnesota. Wow, yeah, Bob, but it was South Duluth. Goddamn, South Duluth, Minnesota is Wisconsin. I know that much. Oh, no, it's the South Duluth that's down off the hill, right down there by Lake Superior. That's South Duluth. He even went and got himself all college edumacated in Minnesota before he packed up his carpet bag and headed for old Virginia. Be careful, Carol Baker. Carol says, I'm Skyping my snark in Kansas City rush hour traffic. It's accident day. Two in each direction, within a mile of another. Glory! Now, save the glories for tomorrow, Carol. And put the effing phone down and pay attention. Those people are crazy. It wouldn't be South Kansas City, would it? The guy who's all Roth about pulling down a statue of Bobby Lee and putting it in a room somewhere where people can stand and gaze at the treasonous visage of that old criminal. Yeah, he's. Yep. Born in South Duluth. Now, I really don't know what part of Duluth he was born in. And when you get right down to it, when you're in the teeth of the winter, there's no such thing as South Duluth. Man, you can be scheduled to fly into Duluth, Minnesota in June and have your flight canceled because of a goddamn blizzard. Every time I see the word Duluth, I think of Janie, who taught me to say sauna. Hi, Janie. Yeah, this is special. By the way, getting in on the opportunity, Steve in New York says, the fact that my cream is curdled and I can't drink my coffee is worse than a Yankee telling a Southerner that his monuments don't matter. But for that matter, we're not telling them that their monuments don't matter, these unreconstructed racists and pro-slavery advocates. We're telling them their monuments matter so much that we're tired of the pigeons shitting on them. And people, you know, spray painting and tagging the base and things like that. We want it to be in a nice, sedate, safe little room where anybody who wants to go and venerate a racist or a committer of treason can do so in peace and in a safe space for the special, special snowflakes. Oh, okay, that explains why Carol's able to Skype snark. I'm just sitting here in the same spot for 10 minutes. I think I'm safe. I turned the motor off. Not South Kansas City. This one's on I-470 at the junction of 50 Highway. Oh, well, yes, there's that. Thank you. Thank you, Clarity. The AIDS epidemic is worse than Jethro's hurt feelings. But I want to be careful about calling him Jethro. I'm as someone who was born and raised behind the cornpone curtain. I'm not taking credit for this one. Whoa, no. Mm-mm. No, I'm sorry, friends, neighbors, members of the Horn Family Community Congregation there in Minnesota. I'm applying the Ken Ham rule to this one. You know the Ken Ham rule. That's the rule that says that every time we bring up the Creation Museum in Kentucky or the Ark Park with which Ken Ham of Australia scammed the taxpayers of the Commonwealth of Kentucky out of millions of dollars. Every time I mention that, I say, you know, it's time for y'all to call him back. It's time for y'all to call him home. At which point, the angry architect or John Fox or Robert will immediately write me and say, nope, sorry, don't want him. You're stuck with him. Love you. Mean it. Forget it. Nope. Mm-mm. I'm invoking the Ken Ham rule on this one. Corey Allen Stewart is a Minnesota problem. What did y'all do to that poor boy to turn him into a goddamn Confederate sympathizer? Honestly. Whatever it was, that was just mean. Meanwhile, speaking of Robert in Australia, Americans are all northerners to me. Well, that's true enough. But we won't hold your southernness against you in this case. Because it's not one of those, the sun shines bright on my old... No. Yep. Apology accepted, Clarity. Clarity said, sorry, Mr. Bodine. I didn't get that damn sixth grade education for nothing. But all kidding aside, this is your modern Republican Party, and it's Titanic Tuesday, so what the... And it comes from the same ideological space. There's not much difference, you know. It comes from the same intellectual location as somebody who can say that well, let's go to the audio, shall we?
Tremendous champion of supporting families and enabling them to thrive in the new reality of... I certainly heard the criticism from the media, and that's been perpetuated. But I know from personal experience, and I think the thousands of women who have worked with and for my father for decades when he was in the private sector are a testament to his belief and solid conviction in the potential of women and their ability to do the job as well as any man.
Especially their vaginal grabability, right, Ivanka? Because that's Ivanka Trump. That's Ivanka Trump speaking at the W20 conference in Berlin, which was designed to focus on issues that face women around the world in a discussion by women NGOs, female entrepreneur associations, and scientists. And she got a house full of boos when she said to the group that her father, Donald J. Trump, and the spirochetes that live between his ears, well, I mean, I'm adding, they're there, I'm just mentioning them, you know, attention must be paid, that her daddy is a tremendous champion of supporting family. You just take a beat there. Take another beat. Get your jaw up off the ground. Spit out. Right. Don't stop. Stop screaming. I forgot to tell you about the hockey puck. Stop screaming because the neighbors will worry. No. Ivanka Trump, child of monumental privilege, actually said to a room full of women that her daddy, who bragged about needing to spontaneously gobble Tic Tacs because sometimes he just has to kiss a beautiful woman, and said at one point that if his daughter, the self-same Ivanka, was not his daughter, he would definitely tap that. Yeah, the guy who wanted eagerly to take health care away from tens of millions of American citizens is a tremendous champion of supporting families. Yeah, meanwhile, somewhere out there, all those Trumpanzees with their economic anxiety. They're going,
he's supporting my family. Yeah. Granted, I got laid off at the mines last year, and my mining job ain't come back, and it ain't never going to come back, and because, see, they're blowing up the mountains now, and they don't need this kind of mining, what I done. But he's my president, and he's supporting our family, even though SNAP benefits going to get cut, and by the way, well, we'll talk about that in a minute, but, he's supporting, he is a tremendous champion of supporting families. Phew! Look at my haircut, Andy. It's all slickety in the back.
Yeah. She said it. She said it. And I guess that's okay. Now, I don't have... Oh, let me see if I can find this. Because it actually means something. That's true. Carol Baker pointing out that while Ivanka was talking, and one wonders if, you know, Ivana, her mama, was Czech or Moravian. And I got to wondering if Ivanka is Czech for Marie Antoinette. Oh, yeah, thousands of women have worked for my father. Yeah, that proves he supports families. So anyway, earlier this week, Variety Magazine hosted a luncheon in New York City. Okay, it was Friday, not earlier this week. It was Friday, it was last week. It was a Power of Women luncheon. And at the event, Chelsea Clinton was honored because of her work with the Alliance for a Healthier Generation. Chelsea Clinton! Oh my God, her mother! The devil! Goldman Sachs speeches, son of a God! Ooh, neoliberal! Oh. Well, anyway, Chelsea was honored in her own right at this luncheon. Other women were honored as well. And Vanessa Bayer was there, and she was delivering some, she delivered some, you know, those kind of cute luncheon remarks that you deliver when you're invited to be the, you know, sort of MC, toastmaster, mistress, whatever. And she said, Vanessa Bayer said, okay, we have some pretty amazing honorees this afternoon. Jessica Chastain, Gail King, Blake Lively, Audra McDonald, Tina Knowles, Sherry Redstone, and Chelsea Clinton. And they all have one thing in common. None of their moms are president. And the audience went, oh.
Chelsea was not amused.
It was a groaner. It wasn't mean-spirited. It was just a groaner. It was just a one-liner, throw it away, out the door. But when it came time for Chelsea to speak, she stood up. And I don't know, what would you do? Would you just let it blow past, or would you draw attention to it by talking about it some more? I don't know the answer. Well, Chelsea opted for talk about it more to draw attention to it. So she got up and she talked about childhood obesity and protecting children and looking to make sure that they've got a good, healthy diet, all of which are good things. Oh, God damn it, Bob, they're neoliberal. Yeah, okay. But she did. She talked about childhood obesity, which is a real thing. It's a concern. Good God. I can see it all over where I live, and most likely, if you're in the United States, you can see it all over where you live, too. The need to get kids out, get them exercising, get them away from the damn telescreen. And to the extent that there is a hell of a lot more junk processed food out there now than there was a generation ago, trying to get people to pay attention to what their kids are eating. And getting them damn hillbillies to quit putting the Mountain Dew in the baby bottles. Gives them Mountain Dew mouth. Just ask Diane Sawyer. I remember several years ago when she went down into Kentucky and she done seen some babies what had the Mountain Dew mouth. Never mind that the babies' teeth were crumbling in their heads because they lived near mountaintop removal operations. It was a Mountain Dew mouth is what it was. But she got up and she talked about it. Oh, but she'd sat there long enough and she had a zinger ready for Vanessa Bayer. And she said, I'm particularly proud and grateful for the example that my mother has always set. It's always better to get caught trying than never to have tried at all. Chelsea, I think the sentiment was real and genuine. Probably best not to use the phrase get caught in that context, though, because there's already a big enough problem with people on the left and the right going, God, but God damn her emails! Jesus, Benghazi! Just saying. And so she finished her remarks, and she had a zinger ready for Vanessa Bayer. Vanessa, we may be able to say in this room today that no one's mother is currently president, but someday someone's will be. And I agree. And you know who those kids will be? You know who those kids will be whose mother is the first president of the United States? I'm going on record. It is 6:53 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 25th day of April 2017. Someday, someone's mother will be president of the United States. And you know who they're going to be? They're going to be the Kushner kids. Just kind of let that sink in. They're going to be the Kushner kids. That's right. Ivanka and Jared's kids are going to be the kids in the room whose mother was the first president of the United States. I bear no animus to Chelsea. She's done, I guess, a lot. And she's got some lovely, she's got a lovely little kid. And look, I don't hold it against Hillary Clinton that she got screwed over by a vicious, antiquated relic from our slave-owning past in the form of the Electoral College. Hillary's problems are Hillary's problems. As bad a campaigner as she was, as bad a politician as she was, as bad a candidate as she was, she still managed to get more votes by about 3 million than the south, than the northbound end of a southbound horse that occupies the White House at this moment and stands as a clear and present danger to the very idea of the continuation of human life on Earth. But Donald Trump did not put his daughter Ivanka, age 35, conveniently, even right now, old enough to be president of the United States in her own right, who will be 40 in October of 2021. You know, when we're, 41. No, for 39. Me and Cyber. Anyway, she's gonna be pushing 40 somewhere or thereabouts. Let's see, 17. She's 35. 39. Yeah, she'll turn 39 in October of 2021. Just as Comrade Kumquat is getting into the first year of his second term. And so by the time he leaves office, she will have had 8 years being exposed to everything going on inside the executive branch of the government of the United States of America. So, as we wind up the filibobster, a question. For everyone who has talked about the urgent need for the United States of America to have its first woman president, how will you feel if that first woman president turns out to be Ivanka Trump Kushner? It's just a thought experiment. That's all. I don't hate Hillary Clinton. And I don't hate Bernie Sanders. I don't hate Martin O'Malley. I'm not crazy about Jim Webb. But we were bombarded in the last presidential campaign about the absolute imperative that this country finally, break the gender barrier in the Oval Office. That this country must have a female president. And I largely agree that it would be good to break that barrier. The old white men certainly have had their run. But unless a miracle transpires, and well, I've predicted that Hillary Clinton will run again in 2020. And I have predicted that she will, of course, be beaten. If it proves that I'm wrong and she runs again and she actually wins, then she'll be the first woman president. But as a thought experiment, I want to know whether the urgency of a first woman president includes the possibility that that first woman president could be someone as Marie Antoinette entitled and privileged as Ivanka Trump Kushner. Would that satisfy people, the people who say, we got to have a woman president? Or was it merely a matter of, We had to have a first woman president as long as that first woman president was Hillary Clinton? I, for one, wish, sweet Jesus, how I wish. Oh, dear God, how I wish. And I'm pretty sure that I'm safe in saying Bernie Sanders wishes, Keith Ellison wishes, Chuck Schumer wishes, Nancy Pelosi wishes. Pick out your favorite. John Lewis wishes, Elijah Cummings wishes that first woman president had been Hillary Clinton, the person who won the most votes. Because every night, as I've pointed out and as I've gotten so much grief for doing, every one of these nightmare hellscape stories that comes down the pike that we wind up talking about on this program comes with the caveat, we wouldn't be talking about this except for. So I wish our first woman president had been Hillary Clinton. But there's first and then there's first. America got all excited about the idea of having Barack Obama be the first black president. Oddly enough, America didn't get so excited about the idea of having Jesse Jackson be its first black president. There's firsts and there's firsts. You get my point? I'm not trying to be mean to anybody. I'm trying to foster a dialogue about exactly what it is we say we want. If first woman president is all that matters, then it'll be okay if it's Ivanka Trump Kushner on January the 21st, 2025. Because we just gotta check that little goddamn box off. If, however, it is important that the Republic survive, then maybe having Marie Antoinette take over the reins of government of the executive branch on January 21st, 2025 isn't such a good goddamned idea. And somewhere in the midst of all of this, There's some precious little soul sitting there going, yeah, but Chelsea, Clinton dynasty, goddamn! Right? You know it. You know it. But that thing just dawned on me this morning. Because I was hearing all of these millionaire pundits blithering away. And I've seen it for weeks now about how, you know, the reason he gave her an official White House title is because, you know, she's one of the only people he feels like he can really trust. And people say that to the extent that he says something decent once in a while, you know, or maybe puts up a $60 million fireworks show over some concrete plane sheds in Syria, is because Ivanka touched his heart with the poor little gassed babies. Well, hell, the gassed babies were horrible. You know, except to the people who say that that really didn't happen and Syria didn't do it. You know, the left equivalent of the Sandy Hook truthers. It was. It was horrible what happened. Horrible, horrible. But you know what? Blowing up babies with conventional weapons is equally so. It's not like a baby that's had, half a leg blown off and is bleeding out, somehow suffers a little less than a baby who's been gassed. You get my point? But that, you know, that's not why Ivanka is effectively within her daddy's inner circle and pulling double duty as substitute utility first lady. It's because Tangerine Tiberius is thinking dynastically. Maybe I'm wrong. I'd kind of like to be. But something makes me think that I'm not. Just a feeling. You know, it's that gut people refer to. A couple of emails before we go to the break. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Subject line, but. Hey, Bob, these young people have some of the most highly developed thumbs I've ever seen. As far as the POTUS is concerned, have all of his followers taken the red pill? One might say so. Ah, very clever. Wait a minute. Cowbell for the Mac. Why is it no one's celebrating the first Simeon president? Well, because we kind of had that. The first Simeon president was back there during the reign of error. The chimp in chief. Dim leader. George W. Bush. And thank you very kindly. Oh, wait. Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, writes with a note. Subject line, let the dynasty begin. Whether or not we are satisfied, I'm sure the Electoral College has no problem regarding Milady's taking of the presidency. Point well made, Steve, in China. Jack in Shreveport, now the wheels are turning. Ivanka as president. Jack in Shreveport says, the better to pardon that sorry Trump ass with. And all his little friends, too. Pardons will make it right. The more you think about it, the more sense it makes, doesn't it? Wealthy families tend to think in dynastic terms. They can't help it. They feel like they're favored of the elite. They feel like they are elect of the Almighty. And if you asked Marcus Aurelius, I have no doubt he'd say, oh, definitely. I think Ivanka would make a fabulous president. She'd make a great, a very fabulous president. What proud papa wouldn't? So this is, after all, conversation radio. That means the conversation part really, really matters. If you'd like to participate in same, well, connect 304-663-4676. That's the studio line, spells horn, 304-663-horn, or 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, well, that's Bob Kincaid Horn. They all ring through into the studio here, and conversation radio is the name of the game. And, well, it'll work as long as we keep it on the air. And I'd like to thank Charlene very kindly. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so much for taking us down to $335 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you, Charlene. We'll round it off to where I can divide it into half. Okay, that's one. That's 10 at 33.50 or 33 and a half people at 10. That much I've got. But thank you, Charlene. Hopefully others will stand with you in helping carry this forward. I'm sure there'll be some sort of a shitty email later about either hating Chelsea or loving Chelsea, and I didn't say something sufficiently obsequious in one way or the other. But that's the problem with refusing to be a worshiper of anyone. I don't worship gods, and I am damn sure not going to worship any people. Period. I personally think that's the horn's strong point. But apparently I'm supposed to be, according to some, a servile, obeisant purveyor of only one set of ideas. Oh, well. All right, break time, and being as how it's a Tuesday, this 25th of April, 2017, we've got the Green News Report coming from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Light up the phones, or, well... Light up the phones, or if you don't, by God, I'll keep filibobstering. That's not a promise. That's a threat. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Oh, screw this. Too downbeat. It's Tuesday, April 25, 2017.
What do we want?
Science!
When do we want it?
Now!
The March for Science was a global success on 7 continents.
We've had close to 5,000 scientists contact us to say they wanted for office.
What's next? Recruiting scientists to run for elected office. The planet hit a milestone in rising CO2. Plus, for Britain, its own milestone. The first full day without coal since the 1880s.
All of those encouraging stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desmond.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and...
Good evening. On this Saturday night, hundreds of 6 continents and throughout the United States came out in support of science.
And by the Sunday morning news shows, they were all forgotten. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, tens of thousands of science supporting them came out all over the world over the weekend.
Yes, they did. In fact, it was more than just on that in a moment. First, a quick follow-up to a story in our last Green News Report. After a swift public outcry, the U.S. Treasury Department has oil giant ExxonMobil's request for an exemption from sanctions against Russia that moving forward on its offshore drilling deal. It attracted a lot of attention in the U.S. because the half-trillion-dollar deal was originally negotiated and Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson, who is now U.S. Secretary.
That this was going to be it. They were going to lift those sanctions, at least as far as Exxon was concerned. But the administration continues to surprise us one way or another.
Indeed, they do. Also surprising, by all accounts, the March for Science on Earth Day. Yes.
Climate change is my biggest concern.
Science seems under attack. Now facts seem under attack.
You can see that there's a lot of hope. And I think a bit of fear, but a lot of hope.
Hundreds of thousands of people marched in the nation's capital and in more than 600 cities around the world to show their support for scientific research. And this was on all seven continents. Even scientists at research outposts sent their photos of their mini marches. The nonpartisan march was to rally the public to defend science and its role in informing public in the face of the Trump administration's rollbacks of pollution protections, its denial of climate's massive proposed cuts to scientific research and federal science agencies like the EPA of Health. It's also notable that the March for Science was the top story on the broadcast networks, leading the nightly news on Saturday on CBS, ABC, NBC.
It's been 47 years since the first Earth Day. Today, it was observed around the world with a focus on science.
Tens of thousands of scientists and their supporters take treats.
However, Media Matters for America notes that some networks still couldn't resist promoting balance and provided a platform to climates in their reports. We're looking at you, CNN and CBS.
Well, at least they covered it at least a night after the marches had happened. But by Sunday morning, as Media Matters also points out, all of these marches, hundreds of thousands of people, were completely ignored the next day on all of the Sunday news.
Yep. And now the scientific community and environmentalists are gearing up for the People's Climate March on Saturday, April 29th. The Washington Post reporters are working on what's next, building on the momentum to create a science advocacy network to help scientists communicate their findings to the public and to help engage in science and speak up for science in policy making. But one group is going further. 314 Action, named after the first three digits of, is a new organization working to recruit scientists to run for office. In an interview with PBS, Shaughnessy Naughton, a chemist turned congressional candidate, said politics needs more problem solvers.
We really need pro-science voices and people with scientific backgrounds to step up and get involved. We've had close to 5,000 contact us to say they wanted to run for office.
But as the people march, the planet just marched past another carbon dioxide milestone. The humans digging up and burning fossil fuels, the concentrations of heat-trapping CO2 in the 410 parts per million over the weekend for the first time in the history of our species.
That's not good.
Nope. The planet's surface has already warmed nearly a full degree Celsius since the first Earth Day in April 1970. But finally, some good news. On Friday, the day before Earth Day, Britain saw its first full day without burning coal for electricity for the first time since the Industrial Revolution began in the late 1880s. Kay called it, quote, a watershed in the energy transition.
No coal for the entire nation of Britain. Kind of amazing, wondering when the U.S. is going to even come close to anything like that feat.
No coal, please. We're British.
For much more on all of the stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters.
I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want a... You tell me that it's evil.
Yeah, I was waiting. I could just listen to the rest of the song. I love that song. 23 minutes past the on this Titanic Tuesday, the 25th day of April 2017. And yes, we have $335 of fundraising to do this evening to send Lassie after Timmy because the horn is down the reverb well tomorrow evening. So if you'd like to join with Paul and Charlene, well, please feel free to do so because... That's all that, you know, that's all that keeps us going, plain and simple. Let's run over and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, Bob.
How in the world are you?
Oh, I just got off the phone with the state. I had some guy with a truck spraying the lot upwind from me just now, 4 miles an hour faster than it's legally supposed to be applied. And so I took a video of him and sprayed right next to my fence.
Oh, and lovely.
Yeah, and anyway, I asked him to roll down his window, you know, and, you know, what he's spraying. And he says, Polaris. And I said, you know, it's too windy. And he goes, oh, I can spray it up to 10 miles an hour. And I goes, I would see the way the wind's blowing. It's blowing right on my property. To which he replies, you still got a lawn, don't you? Yeah. And he goes, go ahead and call the DEQ. So I did. They gave me a number for the hotline and said,
wonder what they're going to be calling you.
Oh, hippie, tree hugger,
troublemaker, outside agitator.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I need to beat on my chest, but I went through the Oregon State University Ag Extension Master Gardener program, into the Master Gardener. And, I found out, it's kind of a happy face on, you know, it's a kind of a public outreach, and they do a lot of good work, the Master Gardener, but we're forbidden from, going outside of protocols, so to speak. And, one of the things that, they still are not,
or what? They pull your Master Gardener card?
Well, yeah, they have a way of dissing you and that, but it, months of they still consider it to be a necessary part of no-till agriculture, and that, you know, the selling point, well, we don't have to run the tractor as many times across the field. Energy. You know, we're saving fuel. It's carbon.
Well, my eyes just rolled back in my head a little bit on that, but.
Oh no, but that's what the ag schools are telling their ag economy students, as against, you know, people who talk bad about Monsanto. Beholden to those corporations, Dow Chemical, Monsanto, Bayer Pharmaceuticals, for their biotech funding. Okay.
Right. Well, I mean, that's how they.
But anyway,
and in particular,
story,
your state land grant universities, and
back to the story, I found out they are also anti-labeling. They're anti-GMO labeling because they take the FDA line that it's same, it's equivalent, that a GMO product is equid product, and it's not. You know, they had the incidents where they Brazil nut gene into stuff, and people were having anaphylactic reactions.
Well, let me approach this perhaps from a. They'd be so proud of me over at the Cato Institute for doing this, Clarity. Let me approach this from a free market standpoint. If a company wants to label that they are non-GMO, why the hell shouldn't they be able to?
You mean like the manure Doritos?
Well, yeah, or I mean, actually, I was thinking more in a several times daily cup of yogurt. I go back and forth mostly between Oikos and Chobani, any organics.
No.
But, you know, my Chobani is labeled no RGBH, no GMOs, no HFCS. Now, there's a little bit of a con there because they say instead of saying that it's got sugar in it, it says it has cane juice.
Yeah, they lobbied the FDA to get a new designation of sweetener as, yeah, cane juice.
But anyway, I mean, it influences my decision. I mean, I'm just particularly hung up on high fructose corn syrup. And I prefer not to purchase the stuff.
Well, and there is a difference between sucrose and fructose.
Damn straight there is. And in the way it's metabolized, there's a difference?
Yeah, the liver, all fructose has to be passed through the liver. And if your liver, if you have a fatty liver, which a lot of Americans do that are overweight, it taxes your whole metabolism, and it's, you know, it stresses you out in many different ways.
Yeah, but so
from a free market standpoint, why? And if the free market bullshit that these people preach is true, then if it turns out that people like to buy things that are labeled no GMOs, no RGBH, no high fructose corn syrup, no artificial preservatives, then the rest of the market will follow, right?
You would think so.
But these people say, it's all the same, damn it. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, and in a way, they're trying to make the designation of organic so watered down that it doesn't mean too much anymore.
Well, yeah, and as Asa just pointed out to me, they should also be able to tell you on the label if there's any ground up golf balls in your in your daggum hash browns. Going back to yesterday's story.
Well, potatoes are low in not that much fiber, so I would imagine that extra, you know, that micronic microplastic would probably, you know, aid your bowel transit time.
Well, it depends on whether or not your golf ball has a gutta percha cover, or one of the cut proof Sirlin covers, or that cover that the pros use that smiles real easy.
I worked in a potato processing. Potatoes are big here in Eastern Oregon too.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And I worked in a potato. They have in fact, Lamb Weston invented the potato gun that makes the French fries. You know that they have the McDonald's contract still. But I can't imagine what a golf ball would do to one of those guns.
Well, I mean, I never cease to be amazed, Clarity, by the happy accidents of expertise that wander their way into this program. When I was talking about the golf balls and the hash browns yesterday, I had no idea that there was somebody in our Horn Family Community Commune who had potato plant expertise.
Yeah,
would you care to speculate to ponder upon just how hunks of golf balls get into an entire batch of hash browns?
Well, it had to have been how do I say it? A disgruntled employee tossing something into one of the bins. Somebody who got cheated out of a break. Or got turned down for a raise.
Probably in a non-union shop where people get treated like crap.
That would be Lamb Weston. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wasn't asking for you to point fingers, but while we're doing it, yeah, over there, them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Orida, the guy that owned them, he sold his plant here in Hermiston, which is Simplot, which has been converted to a gas fire plant because they had all the concrete poured, you know. And he farms out potatoes. They ship them to China for processing.
So even though this stuff was, I'm trying to remember now who, because I've gotten rid of the story. Apparently the one company packaged the hash browns for the Harris Teeter in-store brand. Okay. And then they themselves pulled their own brand. I'll have it here in a second.
Well, I would speculate
McCain Foods USA.
That it was Maine potatoes, because you know Maine is a live free or die right to work state, so it was probably somebody in Maine.
Well, I'm curious now to find out who, but so are you saying that? I mean, do you think McCain Foods actually? I mean, were they? Is it their potato fields, or do they buy potatoes from somewhere else?
Well, you know, some places subcontract, but as far as the potatoes on here out here in the West Coast, except for like the nonpareils that we ship back east to restaurants and stuff, you know, hoity-toity baked potato type stuff,
right?
Most of our stuff is consumed right here, you know, in the Northwest, shipped into BC, and California doesn't grow as many potatoes because they just don't have the right soils for it.
Well, I guess the French fry capital of the world is somewhere called Florenceville, according to McCain. I don't know where Florenceville is.
I would dispute that because simply because Lamb Weston has a freezer dry storage that's, oh, I think it's probably about 4 football fields inside full of frozen French fries that they ship out to McDonald's.
Well, I've never heard of McCain Foods before, but I'm wondering if maybe somebody got a hold of Great Uncle John's golf bag and decided it would be good fun. But no, they've got 6 plants in Canada, 11 plants in the U.S., 3 plants in Latin America, South Africa. They got 2 plants. They got 1 plant in India.
Oh.
They got 5 plants in Australia and New Zealand, 1 plant in China, and 13 plants in Europe. Damn.
So, something tells me that there's probably a little bit of human trafficking going on in those factories.
Well, they say on their website, simple ingredients, simply prepared.
Yeah. Well, hash brown is a hash brown. I mean.
And a golf ball is a golf ball, right?
Yeah, and you know, before they're cooked, they're basically the same color.
Once they're peeled, I mean, who can tell?
Yeah, blends. It's perfect camouflage, sabotage, accoutrement.
I mean, that could be one of your titleists, or it could easily just as well be a what are some potato breeds? I'm not up on my potato.
Well, Norbest, Yukon.
New potatoes are about the size of a golf ball now, aren't they?
My grandpa called them Irish potatoes. Because they're red, you know.
Okay, here we go. In 1957, Wallace and Harrison McCain, along with their brothers Robert and Andrew, founded McCain Foods, opening the first production facility in their hometown of Florenceville, New Brunswick, Canada.
Oh, yeah, lots of potatoes there.
And so they operate across 6 continents with 47 sites. And they're acquiring Swinkles and Royan Van Geloven. Who knows?
You'll have to clean it up.
Wait a minute. Oh yeah, that was very cowbell worthy. That was beautiful. That's right up there. Is that what we're calling it these days?
Yeah.
Well, I am being told by I'm being told by Arnold that they make terrible products.
Yeah, well, you know, the Canadian Canadian cuisine leans heavily towards canned and bologna and, you know, those things that are kind of bland on the palate. Mustard pickles, you ever had a mustard pickle?
Damn straight I have.
Yeah, well, those, I guess that's more of an Eastern thing. But, no, you know, the things are bland, you know, you put gravy on everything. And it's fine.
Gravy.
Gravy, yeah. Baby.
But, you know, you're also, speaking of Canada, them being in New Brunswick, you know, we're about to start a trade war with Canada.
Yeah, well, they're closer than China, and they listen to most of our television, so we don't have to go out of our way to bombard them with our propaganda.
Hey, Jesus, I wish that cut right to the heart of things, didn't you?
You know, 90% of Canadians live within 100 miles of the border.
Well, that's true. And Mike in Cascadia pointed out something to me. There was another one of those executive orders today, and now, Comrade Kumquat is going after the national monuments. And I found it interesting. I had seen that story earlier today. And then I ran across the story about how he's going to impose tariffs on Canadian lumber in retribution for the Canadian dairy issue, which was horrible, horrible, horrible. And of course, you know, there's no relationship between the two. But along the way, they noted that Trump says it's unfair the way they cut timber, because in Canada the timber companies have access to public lands, and then boom, an assault on public lands, because something like Big Ears National Monument in Utah, you know what that needs? A coal mine. Needs coal mine in it.
But it's a whole different thing, Bob. It's Crown lands. It's owned by Her Majesty. It's not owned by the Canadian people. And all those forests are owned by the royal family. It's Crown land, and it's not public land.
I understand, but you see how that you difference. See, but you see how the prop how they would catapult the propaganda, as Dim Leader used to say down here.
Well, and you know
what we've got to do? We got to have some fairness with Canada, because they're totally outsmarting us with their timber. So we have to go in and cut down all the national forests for America.
Well, the only thing that saved a lot of the forests here in Southern Oregon has been the economy has been bad, and fires. And the tree sitters have just made it really inconvenient for these companies to get into the old growth that's left, which there isn't much left.
And that's what they really want, is the old growth. Damn, trees are too old.
Well, and if they can't mill it, they can export it and get a pretty good price for it. Most of our logs that we cut down are not being used domestically. They're going to Asia. And we can't, compete with Siberian forests. You know, they have no logging controls there. So I think we're better off, having a little overbearing forest service here in this country. Because once the forests are gone, and some of this stuff is second growth, the second time you cut it, it takes a long time for it to go back because the soils just don't recover.
Yeah. And I realize that this didn't come, but this kind of stuff never enters into the calculations of somebody like the Clementine Caligula. For instance, he put up that $60 million fireworks show over Syria, and then dropped that bomb on Afghanistan. And do you know that? I don't even think it was measured in hours; it was measured in minutes. In which the price of a gallon of gas here in Appalachia, where it was up 10 cents, and then so it is now up 20 cents from what it was before we decided to put up the fireworks. The same thing applies. What I'm getting at, Clarity, the same thing applies to the timber issue. This is the American people who are going to take it on the chin.
Yeah.
Because those are, that's soft pine for, 2x4 studs and things like that, framing. And it's not like the people selling it are going to say, we'll keep the price what it was. We'll just eat the cost of that. How about that? So, he's screwing people at the pump. He's screwing people who are trying to build a new house. Because, they really don't matter.
Well, and the petroleum industry's got a ready-made saying, we're retooling from heating oil, because it was a real heavy winter, to summer, gasoline production. So, we just have a backlog of the demand and therefore we can bump it up 50 cents.
Right.
And they do it every year, and every year, somehow, one refinery, they have a gasket blowout, and they have to go offline, and therefore, the glut disappears overnight.
Well, remember last year when the entire Southeast was thrown into chaos because, a pipeline full of gasoline just blew up? because I remember that. But you know, going back to the issue of trees and timbering and things like that, pulp pines, for instance, why are we still doing pulp pine for paper when you can do the same thing for the most part with hemp, and it takes 9 months to regrow the hemp crop where it takes 20 years to regrow the pulp pines? I mean, does that make any sense?
Well, I'll give you one reason. One is that the hemp land is going to be taxed where the Forest Service, they're getting it for under market price. So if they can get into the national forest and get contracts, they're getting it for next to nothing. You know, same as they want to get into the national monuments and do fracking because they don't have to pay any property taxes. But if they go out on state lands, they're going to have to pay royalties to the state.
Well, oh, and by the way, if I had a duck to drop from the ceiling, I would drop it for you right now, Clarity. There you go. Well done. Because you just mentioned fracking. And we all know my Morning Joe problem, right? Well, it manifested itself again this morning. Nothing I could do about it.
Never runs out of ugly shit, does he?
So there I am, watching Morning Joe, and they bring on Michael Bloomberg and Carl Pope. Do you happen to recall who Carl Pope is?
Wasn't he a neocon?
No.
Oh.
Carl Pope is the former head of the Sierra Club.
Oh, okay. All right.
Carl Pope had to resign as head of the Sierra Club in disgrace when it got out that he had taken buku bajillion million dollars from the fracking industry in exchange for the Sierra Club promoting fracking as a bridge fuel to the future. A bridge fuel to our clean energy future. And people all over the country who trusted the Sierra Club to, you know, not get in bed with the hydrocarbon industry went, "What the, Carl?" Or, you know, to use the llamas in hats for it, "Carl!" And so he kind of went away and disappeared, and the Sierra Club has done everything they can, mostly, to get away from the idea. And along the way, this is just story time, so please bear with me. Along the way, Michael Bloomberg and the foundation that he runs gave $50 million to the Sierra Club for the very noble purpose of funding their Beyond Coal campaign.
Blanco.
And the Beyond... did you say clean coal?
Blanco.
I heard you. If you say it one more time, Don Blankenship appears in the studio, so I'll thank you to stop that.
It's a subliminal message from Beelzebub.
Yes, it is, isn't it? damn it! Wait a minute. It's just the way you said it. And I'm not going to say it the third time because I don't want that murderous bastard standing in my studio.
Stay away.
They used the money that they're still using. I mean, they still got a bunch of it. Got enough of it to burn a sopping wet elephant's what they got. To retire some coal-fired power plants. And, of course, the coal-fired power plants were then immediately replaced by, care to? Frack gas-burning plants, yes.
Natural gas.
Bridge fuel to the future. The future. The future. The future.
Yeah.
So, okay, noble work. Curiously, there's not a whole lot of Beyond Coal money being used in Appalachia to, you know, stop mountaintop removal, but that's another thing. I mean, you know, who the hell am I? I'm just some stupid-ass hillbilly.
I think the fund would be called Beyond Help, wouldn't it?
Well, beyond if you were going to give Boodles of money to help Appalachia, it would be the Beyond Hope campaign.
Beyond Hope.
That's not true. I mean, there's a way out. It's just getting people to support it and help with it. Well, there you go.
Yeah, it's not all paved over yet, is it?
No. In fact, I posted something from my friend Vernon Haltom via Cold River Mountain Watch on my Facebook page. Yeah, that mountaintop removal that isn't happening anymore. There was some blasting that wasn't happening that was curiously enough still happening, just in the last day or so down in the Cold River Valley. But you know, we're just hillbillies. What do we need with clean air and water? Fuck us, right?
I guess you guys haven't got iPhones or anything to record this type of non-event, right?
Well, it's kind of hard to record it right then and there, but we do have the services of a brilliant young man named Junior Walk, who has learned to do a damn fine job using a drone.
Yeah,
and he's got some drone footage of some mountaintop removal ongoing activity that. Sort of stunning, kind of breathtaking, if you want to go and look at it. But anyway, so there they were this morning. Michael Bloomberg and Carl Pope promoting a book about how you can save the planet or something like that. They've co-authored it.
Our planet.
Our planet, yes. Most of it's the 1%'s planet, Clarity. But a little bit of it's ours. The part with all the shit in the water and all the shit in the air. That's our part of the planet.
A little insecticide drift thrown in.
Yeah, why? Well, you still got a yard, ain't you? Jesus Christ. And so there they were. It was like a dog returning to its vomit. Both of them, Michael Bloomberg and Carl Pope, who you would think had learned better, having been run out of the Sierra Club in disgrace, is sitting there on Morning Joe talking about, and of course, we've got to get away from coal, and one of the best ways for us to do that is frack gas. And, you know, this broadcast is going out to the world from New York, which is one of only two states that has an actual moratorium on fracking. And you just want to kind of look up and go, is anybody here paying attention? Jesus. But that's how that played. That was my little morning. Your evening was poison spraying, and my morning was verbal poison spewing. Yay.
Yeah. And you mentioned Ivanka. I wanted to say that our allies for women's issues and that aren't businesses like Chick-fil-A, Hobby Lobby, Home Depot, Snapple is a very conservative company. So take your business elsewhere for those, you know, do what you can. I was just going to say that that's all we can do now is just try to take care of what we can, you know.
Yeah, I get it. I really, really, really do get it. And you got to use what economic power you have, how you can, because I know that it may be difficult for some folks to, it's not difficult, it's just something we don't think about. Consumer choices are moral choices.
Yeah.
It's not that it's, and so, you know, if you're mindful in the store, no, you're not going to change the world, but you can maybe do a little bit of good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, all those years of me not, of me being an absolute obsessive compulsive label reader about my high fructose corn syrup, and then lo and behold, apparently there were more like me, because the next thing you know, it starts showing up on labels, no high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. Well, I'll be curious to see what happens with the corn industry. You know, the Iowa, if Trump starts a trade war, you know, we export a lot of corn.
Oh, yes, we do.
And if we have a thing, maybe Mexico's going to buy their corn from South Africa or something instead of us.
I think those plans are already in the works.
Yeah.
They can also buy it from, you know, a little further south from them, South America.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they can probably transport corn more efficiently than we do grapes, and we seem to have no problem getting grapes and strawberries from Chile.
Yeah. I don't know what Florida and Georgia's going to do about their winter crops, you know.
Well, it all depends on what happens with his ongoing Kristallnacht to a salsa beat. You saw where a federal judge just this afternoon before airtime he lost again. A federal judge shut down his order on sanctuary cities being having federal monies withheld from them. Nope, sorry, you can't do that. And in a moment of truly delightful irony, he based it on the 10th Amendment. You know, all those 8 years of Republicans hollering about the precious, holy, sacred 10th Amendment, and a federal judge stuck that 10th Amendment right in Donald Trump and broke it off with a nice, healthy twist.
I think we should figure out, I think he's our version of the wicked King Herod. You know, it's just, he's going to make all the tribes suffer.
Well, I really have to go to the Roman emperors, because, I mean, I talk about him being the Clementine Caligula. He really is. We're one step away from him bringing a horse into the cabinet.
Yeah.
As Caligula is said to have done in the Roman Senate.
Equus. A story of an elderly man and his horse. Yeah. If I should take a notion, yeah. Ain't nobody's business what I do.
There we go. Clarity, it's been a lovely conversation. I always enjoy them.
Yes, and I'm glad that I could share some potato wisdom. Right now, they have a guy here locally, and he's trying to breed a new variety of potato right here. They have a lab, and they're trying to find something to get ahead of the curve because this comes on a fruit fly or size a gnat bites the potato plant, and then it gets into the potato, and you can't see it until you cut it open, and it has a zebra, you know, just ruins it.
Ah, that reminds me of the old gag about what's worse than finding a worm in your apple? Finding half a worm?
Half a worm, yeah.
Right. No cowbells involved with that.
They have a reason to spray, you know, all the time. And it's really windy here. So, you know, I guess I'm probably breathing a lot more pesticides than I can see or know about.
Sooner or later, we're all going to be walking around with World War I gas masks on anyway. So get ahead of the curve, Clarity.
Well, I survive with my N95 dust mask. And if people ask, I go, if you need to ask, I don't have time to tell you.
Right. Take it. No. Yeah. You. If you're asking, take a deep breath. No. No. Breathe. Really. Good deep
and
one.
Hold it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold it. Yeah. Here.
Yeah. Hold it in.
Yeah. Clarity. Have a good evening.
You too, Bob. Tuesdays are not the same now that we spend them together.
Thanks so much. Bye now.
Bye.
Clarity calling from the wilds of eastern Oregon. Hey, big thanks going out to Audwin. Thank you so very, very kindly. That takes us down to $235 in fundraising to go this evening. Thank you very much. Hopefully, Charlene and Audwin and Paul will get a little more company. And $35, and then we covered yesterday, and we're starting on tonight with only 59 minutes to go in the program. So it could be done. It could happen. Thank you. Please. Pretty please. Yeah. Hey, look, he was referred yesterday evening in a conversation, brought him up, and there's Arnold. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good, you?
Pretty good. Just got from a couple days in D.C. with the Rick Smith Show, and I actually missed him, and I was actually told family that I was mentioned, so
you got conjured. You absolutely did get conjured.
Really cool, and thank you to the caller. That was really cool. Enjoy the show tonight. And I was on the way home, and I said, you know what? I got a call because so many things you guys touched on it just made me think. Like, you know what? So quick thing about things that are there that aren't there. Locally to us, there's a 14 miles away is a very large garbage dump. And there's a train that goes to this garbage dump. And about 10 years ago, I started seeing this garbage train, 30, 40 cars a day at 2:30 in the afternoon. So I started asking local businesses if people saw this train. And it goes right through the middle of town, you know. And I walked into one of our stores that we're with, and I asked the owner, I said, you know, you've been here since the 60s. I said, do you see the noon? She goes, oh, yes, Arnie, but it doesn't exist. But that is how rural communities deal with having things done to them that they do to have or participate in. You kind of, I mean, I was made insane by it. I actually, my father and I and my wife, we walked into a train yard and our dog, and we found these trains because it was like I see them, they don't not exist. And well, long story short, that's just one of those things where
you can't believe you're lying. Right,
can't believe you're lying. Exactly. So one of those things where the bastards win, because you know, later it's a normal thing. It's a garbage train. First started rolling that sucker through here, nobody wanted to talk about it. And the second thing was, you referred to the shamed Sierra Club guy. And one of the quotes stationed up here, I was the producer of called the Frack Court. And we read a bunch of copy about, fracking related. And it was anti-industry, like full blown, right? One of the things that guy said before he got it was that the condensate evaporation pools where they put the runoff from the drill waste, they would not hurt.
Kill them, not hurt them. Well, yeah, okay.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, you know, we actually read that quote on the air, and then, you know, the host and me, I chimed in from the booth, and I was like, is that real? You know, like did he really say that to somebody? So. I know
the
it's not
birds
funny,
will
but...
not be harmed.
They'll just be killed. So I don't know. It wasn't on any Nash today, but we went down with Rick, and we went to this thing. People's Action had a come together. I guess different groups were running out of money, and they all kind of, you know, together. And it's this. It's one of the groups, Bob, that used to do Radio Rose with. Rick had said you were down there with them a couple times doing the Radio Row. And it's much smaller this time. We were the only – it was a podcaster.
Oh, I didn't even get invited.
Yeah, no, I don't think we were invited. We just showed up.
Ah.
Because, you know, Rick's doing the TV thing now, and you would think he'd be getting a lot of participation. But like you know in the past, you know, it's not that we're getting blacklisted or anything. It's just that, you know, people are hard to get to commit to a schedule or to come on and talk about their organization or their whatever. So we're down there, and some of the conversations that we recorded were really good, right? But today, they were going to do their – we had a march. And so we get on the bus with our – we got our media passes on, you know, got cameras and everything, mics, and we're ready to go film this thing. So they take us to a protest at the White House, which was rad. I mean, that was rad. I had not been to the White House in my life, and the first time I get to go, we're standing in a crowd of 1,000 people saying crazy stuff to you know, the Orange Menace.
Okay. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought too thoroughly, Arnold, but
yeah.
Where's the for-profit media coverage of 1,000 people in front of the White House today?
There is none.
Okay, so it's kind of like your garbage train?
Exactly, sir. Yes, sir. Exactly. And the crazier part is this, Bob. So the whole way over to the White House, which we knew we were going to, they were telling us about the second action. And they wouldn't tell us where we were going. And I actually said to the one lady, I said, you know, I need to set up the shot. I want to see the march coming down the sidewalk. Where are we going? And she's like, I can't tell you. I can't tell anybody. And I'm like, but she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, I don't believe you. You don't know. You know, the bus driver knows where he's going. So, which made everybody laugh. You know how that kind of stuff is.
Yeah, okay, but this sounds a little weird.
So we wind up at the Heritage Foundation.
Ah!
And they did a lobby action.
Over on Massachusetts Avenue?
Yeah. And right in the building, they all went in, like maybe 50, 60 people went in the building and occupied the lobby, and the rest of us were in the on the sidewalk and in the on the front patio thing, and all, you know, like spilling out.
Holy
into the street.
Cow!
There's video on my Facebook, on my Instagram, one of those things, one of those social media things. It'll be on Rick's show this week. I'll send you some clips that you can check out on YouTube as well, and you can share them, whatever.
Yeah, please. I mean, if you want to, are you hooked up over at the Horn Group?
No, I can though. If you want to just chuck me a link where I should go, I'll.
Well, you got to go over there and request, and then somebody will okay your. It's a closed group.
Okay. Yeah, I'll jump in.
And then it's just the Horn. You'll find it, and jump in. You'll get okayed, and then please share those clips. It'll be inspiring.
Yeah, it was, you know what, I've been in a bunch of little protests, but nothing like this. And I mean, I was a media person, but I was just telling my wife this. I could not resist, you know, the chants. I was chanting, you know, I'm supposed to be a camera guy. I couldn't live without part of it. It just consumes you. You know, you see all these people and the energy, and it's just amazing. And, you know, it was raining and there were still 1,000 people in the rain, you know, and I didn't mean to call and talk about another show.
No. I want you to talk about this, Arnold, for God's sakes, please.
It was absolutely inspiring to see. And I would encourage anybody who, you know, if you can't get out and do an action like that, if those type of things don't happen in your surroundings, pick up the phone, call your reps. You know, call anybody that has any power that you want to affect. Let them know, your city council, your town council, you know, do what you can, if you can, you know, because the hashtag was Rise Up 2017. And really, it's time to rise up. I mean, the majority of us, and I'm not going to say the majority of us are progressive, but I think the majority of people want more human-centric things than where our country seems to be going at the moment.
As opposed to, say, corporate-centric?
Exactly. Now, I want to touch on this one thing about, because I heard about the Canada thing this morning. I got on the bus.
Okay, so let's be clear. You are in no hurry unless you're in a hurry.
Okay, great. I am in a hurry, so I just want to just throw this thought out there. So this Canada thing, the 20%, or actually it was 24%, now it's down to 20. So I'm not sure which one it's actually going to be. If you have that number solid, let me know. My take on the Canadian thing is we need tariffs, and tariffs are great. The problem is, as an environmentalist, sort of, because I'm not perfect or anything, I don't want any more trees cut down. So if Canada, who I think is cool, cool country, do a lot of stuff right, some stuff really wrong, like everybody else, if they want to cut down their forests at a rapid rate and sell us cheap wood, fine. They shouldn't do that either, but I have a lot of hemlock in Pennsylvania. Not I, but, you know, us as a state.
No, we all understand. Arnold owns Pennsylvania, yes.
Yeah, it's totally the way it is, right? No, but seriously, right? I didn't mean that, you know, mess that up, but whatever. I don't want to see any trees cut down, and I have a feeling that a 20% tax, 24% tax, totally enough to inspire our logging industries to spend, you know, efforts to clear cut and just act stupid. And I think that if he really wants to impulse over some nonsense with cattle, why don't they try to do something with cattle? It just isn't like.
Well, so because just, Arnold, this is a guy that we're lucky actually, you know, when he decided to shoot the missiles, he actually shot them at, you know, Syria and not Bolivia. I mean, we're talking about a man who is not in his right mind.
Yes.
And so, you know, they were looking, you know, and the people who advise him and own him and hold him and handle him, they were, you know, they were looking for a soft spot. And so you got 75 dairy farmers. Well, we're going to stick it to an entire timbering industry in Canada. That'll bring them to their knees. But I'm with you because from an environmental standpoint, and you know how I feel about that word. Whenever I say environmentalist, I think of white people and men with corduroy jackets and elbow patches chewing on pipes in wood paneled rooms. Okay,
exactly. That's why I said sort of.
Yeah, it sounds. It feels. It's a parlor game. There's efforts being made to make it not so much, but it is. But you know what? I think there should be a tax for timbering, simply because of the amount of carbon sink that you are deleting from the planet.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. People don't realize trees help with erosion, and trees help with filtration of our atmosphere.
Well,
I don't know why anybody wants to cut them down.
Those of us who are reality based here in Appalachia damn sure understand, Arnold. Because, you know, it was just a little around this time last year that a whole chunk of Greenbrier County got washed the hell away. And if you happen to look up at the hills around a place like Raynell, you notice that, son of a bitch, they clear cut the mountains. And these mountains are really, really great at soaking up water, rain, as long as they have trees on them.
I forget the gallon count, but it's something on the I don't want to get it wrong, so I won't say it, but it's like an amazing amount of water with each tree, and you know all species are different, of course, but the average is amazing. Some listener will know and call or text or something.
Yes.
It is an amazing amount of water per tree. And, you know, you can see it even in little ways. People cut down trees around their house and then they have, you know, minor flooding. So of course, if someone cuts the face of a mountain, like, you know, bare, you're going to have flooding at the bottom.
Precisely, I mean, that's why, you know, I keep trying to create these images for people, even though this is radio, of what, like, mountaintop removal looks like. Because the first thing they do is they clear cut the whole damn mountain. And then, because they're...
Talk about something that should be illegal. You know, like, anybody... I've checked out some YouTube footage of mountaintop removal, and... it's horrifying. It's like what you would do to an enemy if you wanted to erase their existence. You would do that to them.
But Arnold, you know, the it gets worse because they clear cut the mountain and they don't even do anything with the wood. They pile it into great big piles. And they pour hundreds of gallons of diesel fuel on it and throw a match. I'm not shitting you. And then what's left over, they push over into the valley. And so that's the beginning of the Valley Fill.
The Valley Fill thing is evil. So let me get this. So I'm a bad capitalist because I would think if you're going to go in there and clear cut like a bunch of devil bastards anyway, wouldn't you get in there with some of those machines, the big scary claw things, and load some trucks and make some
firewood
money?
No, because it is so imperative to get the coal out of to blow away the mountain and get the coal. The nature of mountaintop removal is it has to be done dirty and it has to be done fast. So they don't have time to have some forester with some smattering of ethics left about her sit there and grade lumber.
Mm-hmm.
That's evil.
You're describing evil.
Yes, I am, and that's one of the things that I mean. It's hard to get people to understand how evil this process is. And all the shit gets shoved over in the valley, and everybody's talking about, Trump hasn't accomplished anything in his first 100 days. Well, from here in Appalachia, Arnold, he accomplished one goddamn thing, and that's for sure.
What's that?
He signed the Congressional Review Act bill that overturned the stream protection rule so that now coal companies can dump poison in our streams. Because, when you take all that burnt wood and all that blasted dirt, and you shove it over and you bury a stream with it, well, poisons leach out of that.
Oh yeah.
And that's and that was a big deal here in Appalachia. You had all your hard working miners going, "Woo! We're gonna dump some more shit in the water. Woo! I can't wait till it's more poisoned. Woo!" And it's kind of like what I said to Clarity. Yeah, our little part of the planet that we have is the part with the shitty water and the fucked up air.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some stuff on the internet about the aftermath. Towns, boarded up, churches, boarded up schools.
Well, were you with Rick when he took his tour down into Logan County?
No, he was with, I believe Brett was still with him.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Well, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, boarded up. You should see a place like Welch. You should, or Whitesville. I mean, there's a lot of them through here, and they die when the mountaintop removal comes in.
Now, you're really kind of what might seem like a silly question. With all the, even firewood, even when you burn trees, some of the, when it becomes ash and it gets in the water, some of that stuff is really, really bad by itself. And forget all the rest of it. Is there any point, has there been any studies done as to when that land becomes habitable again, if ever?
Yes. Dr. Margaret Palmer is a brilliant scientist over, I presume she's still at the University of Maryland. And she was on this program oodles of years ago. And I asked her straight up, I said, how long does it take for a mountaintop removal site to become a meaningful, viable part of a functioning ecology? And she said, under the most optimistic of estimations, 100,000 years.
100,000 years?
Yes.
Goes back to the E word again, don't it?
Well, it kind of does.
Not for nothing, but not for.
Because there are. You were talking about how much.
If it were right to us.
Right, you were talking about how much water a tree soaks up.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
One of the things I learned a long time ago, and I'm sure it's subject to, modification one way or the other. But
sure. It
takes something like 1,000 years of leaves sprouting in the spring and falling in the autumn, and the leaves fall on the mountain. It takes something like 1,000 years to generate an inch of topsoil. So that that kind of puts it in perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and the funny thing is, Places like this, you'll have 6 inches, a foot maybe, of really rich, dark soil. And underneath it is Monongalia silt loam and clay.
Yep.
And right underneath that is sandstone. And so that, so when people,
what do they do with the rock that's not coal? I mean, is it like, do they get into any kind of like reclamation for regular quarry work?
No. There's two methods basically. One of them is called backstacking, and that's a method that they use when they don't want to do a valley fill. And okay. So let's say you've got 500 acres. Well, you blast the bejesus out of 200 acres, and you backstack all of your, they call it overburden, on the other.
You fold it over, basically.
Well, and you move it around the site as you extract the coal. And then you kind of put it back and tell the big lie that you have reclaimed the mountain to the approximate original contour.
Yeah, that's when they do that thing where they spray the grass on it.
Yeah, hydroseed, yeah, yes. Non-native species.
That's great.
And the other part is valley fill. You just shove it over the side.
Wow. Yeah, the first time I saw that spray grass, I actually, one of our local farmers, about 7 minutes from my house, they seeded an entire cornfield with a tank truck.
Yeah.
And I was like, that can't be right. And sure as shit, that stuff grew. And I was like, no. So I did what I usually do. I jumped online and started looking around and searching up what I witnessed. And apparently they can do that with a bunch of stuff. It's creepy as all hell.
Yeah, well, and what they do, I call them chia mountains. Although what they spray is not nearly as valuable as something like chia. I mean, goddamn, I saw raspberry jam the other day with chia seeds in it. So apparently there's some nutritional value to it. But this stuff is non-native, and it's supposed to grow on practically grow on rocks, and that's why they use it. But it doesn't live more than a season or two, because up on top of Cayford, for instance, Arnold, just like May, that vast and barren place, it can get to 100 degrees up there in a minute, just on an ordinary warm day. Because there's nothing, you know, the cooling breezes generated by the trees. What trees?
What trees, right? And so knowing it's 100,000 years, it's not even like something where you could tell your grandkids, you know, you can go back there eventually. This is done just, you know, I mean, that's crazy.
It's done.
You know, this back to, the lady who was, is Gorsuch's mother, who ran the EPA under Reagan.
Yeah, Ann.
These bastards think, and I'm not being anti-religious, but I'm obviously going to probably sound that way. These bastards think that God's going to come back and fix all this shit. You know, if there really is a God, you know what he's going to say? He's going to say, you assholes ruined your fucking planet. Fuck you. That's what a real God would say.
Yeah.
Fuck you. You ruined your planet. So.
And I mean, you get no pushback from me. I mean, but, you know, I cite that as one of my reasons for not believing in the big juvenile delinquent in the sky. You know, the fact that there aren't any lightning bolts raining down on coal executives.
And the fact that Dick Cheney's still alive. If there was a God, that son of a bitch would have been dead a long time ago. The first time he had a really evil, you know, a real sweetheart of an evil thought, he'd have been a, you know, and it just goes down.
I love that image, a real sweetheart of an evil thought. Oh, this is really good and evil. Wait a minute.
Well, you know, when I see him, when I see his face now, that's the first thing I think of is evil bastard. Same thing with Kissinger, you know, that kind of scumbag, you know, that just lives to fuck with other people's lives, you know, can't resist. I got a medal.
Yeah, every time I see Kissinger's face, it's just covered in blood.
And you know, like when Hillary was like, and I'm not picking on Hillary, I could care less at this point. But you know, she cited him as a good person, you know, anybody that wants to be taken seriously should call him a war criminal and be done with it.
Well, and, see, that, you know, no, I mean, but I don't think we can just blow past what you just said because it's so true, Arnold. That was one of those, that was one of those one foot in a bucket moments with her candidacy.
Yeah. Like, let me just shoot myself real quick. Like, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like being in a fencing match and turning your foil around and just going, oh, touche. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's like an own goal in soccer or something, right?
And like it's one of those things that makes you wonder: was the whole thing a big? Was it just big theater in front of us? You know, because you find out now that Hillary actually was, you know, telling certain media outlets, you know, promote Trump, push Trump. No one's going to vote for him. We got this. Do it. He's a buffoon. That was totally asinine. You know, that a knock is as good as a boost. And, you know, what everybody kind of discounted was the 20 year media run of discrediting the Clintons. And everybody associated with them, you know, right wing media. And I've talked about this before. You get in your vehicle, you turn on the radio. It could be a rock and roll station. That's got a right wing corporate slant. It could be a country station.
Damn right.
Corporate slant. And you go right down the dial, whether it's religion or talk or, you know.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, like, yeah, the morning zoo crew. And that's the latest from Burnt Toast. Boy, that Hillary Clinton sure is a bitch, isn't she? Ha, 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 ha. And now some commercials.
Right. And then, you know, I get in these arguments with people about talk radio. One of my friends me to participate in a local call-in show here on a commercial station. And I recorded, one of my friends did a St. Paddy's Day, you know, bagpipe segment, you know, Irish flute and all this really cool stuff. He was on for an hour and 30 minutes. And when I cut all the commercials out, I had 34 minutes of actually him talking to the and playing with the host.
So funny how that works, isn't it?
An hour and a half of tape, I got down to 34 minutes. And I called my friend up and I said, listen. Stop asking me to participate in that talk show because I can't wait on hold through the commercial breaks. I don't have a way of tuning them out. I hear them. I produce content. I literally listen to them. And it's bad for your mind. I mean, commercials are like, to me, they're the devil, right? So I can't just endure them so I can talk to somebody. Yours I love because there's no fucking commercials. You know, everybody chips in and the thing goes down the road. And that's, God damn it, that's what it all should be. Because, you know, we get to have these wonderful conversations and we get to.
Yeah, but there aren't a shitload of people doing what I do who are willing to live like I live.
Well, that's true, too. But that's, see, but we're getting there. You know what I mean?
Well, like, yeah, it's more like we're being driven there.
So
let me back up for just a minute with you, Arnold, because you know you were talking about Rick Smith and you said, oh, I don't want to promote another show. I mean, Rick is you know, family here. Doing TV. Tell people what he's doing with TV.
Oh, so this is really crazy. Back around Christmas time 2016, he said to me in passing, he said, do you want to produce a TV show? I said, what are you talking about? And he's like, you know, cause I thought he was just being like, you know, just joking around. And, you know, he does like a video portion of the radio show. You know, it's just the YouTube thing.
Yeah.
And he said, he said, I've been free speech TV for over a year about maybe having an hour a week. And I said, that's huge. How could you do that? And he said, he goes, I don't even know. He said, it's a thing now. It's going to happen. I don't know exactly. And so anyway, Saturday nights at 7, we're on for an hour. He's got an hour on Free Speech TV. I think it's going to be for the rest of the year. And he's self-produced. You know, he records it himself. And I do some editing and some engineering for him. And it was if you look at the first few episodes, you know, we had some technical issues getting software and cameras right and stuff. And we've come into our own now. But it's amazing, you know, he gives, if you've listened to the radio program, it's basically radio for TV. It's just him doing what he does, and he's got people, different union leaders on, different business owners on, and they talk about workers and people with medical store. You know, Rick, I mean, it's just,
yeah, there's, and that's what I was going to say. There is no better voice anywhere in this country for working people and working people's issues than Rick Smith. And I've said that for a long time, and I stand by it. There's absolutely not.
And I appreciate that. And coming from you, that's a really big deal. And, he turned me on to your program. You know, I think I kind of told you this once before. I heard about Bob and, you know, obviously you, you know, and the network and that, and I didn't know what it was. I knew that he was on there, but he's on a bunch of stuff. And then one night I just said, you know, he was off or something, and I was doing the encoder, and I said, you know, let me listen to this Bob and see who Bob is. And first time I heard you was you were on with Angry, and Angry, you know, is just, he was doing a rant and you were right there with him. And it was just one of those things where I was like, I got to listen tomorrow to see if it's always like this. And it's freaking great. You know, I didn't get a chance to listen last night. I had to work, but, you know, when I'm home, like, you know, with the family and making dinner most of the time when your show's on, it's just amazing.
I have ruined more meals, but there is a dining contingent to the Horn Family Community Congregation. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, and the food porn stuff is really great. You know, you start talking about different combinations and everybody's got their own, you know, what's great, what's not great. I'm gonna bail for now. I really appreciate the time.
Arnold, man, you are welcome anytime. These are great conversations. I really, really enjoy them. And I know by virtue of the fact that you got conjured yesterday, other people do too.
I'm really awesome, and I'm honored. I really appreciate it.
Do send a request in to the Horn Group so you can post some of that stuff. I know people are going to want to see it. I mean,
oh, yeah.
the idea of a direct action on the scumbags at the Heritage Foundation just fills me with delight.
It was so funny. The one kid comes up to me and he's like, he knew and he couldn't tell me, and he goes, "Wasn't it worth it?" And I was like, "Yeah."
yeah, it was. And
at one point, I was standing on the front of the building filming the crowd, and I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Well, see, that place is just around the corner from where we used to have our AKE headquarters. And so I saw it all the time. And, you know, very few were the days that I didn't walk past and just, you know, with the middle finger. Because.
Oh, yeah, totally deserving of that. You know, and Rick said to me, Rick said, basically, if you want to see where our government's going to be in 2 years, read their position papers.
Yes.
And, you know, their executive board drafts and stuff. And you will know where we're going in 2 years. And they shouldn't have that kind of power because they don't represent the majority of what Americans want.
They don't represent anybody. Just do the bidding of the money that comes through the door. That's not representation. That's prostitution.
In my view, the American people want jobs that don't suck, healthcare that's affordable and or universally available. We want decriminalized cannabis. We want less oppressive laws on small people and more oppressive laws on corporations. We want that in mass. And I'm tired of not seeing it. So that's why I do what I do.
And all we got to do is get out of our own way. That feels like a sadly monumental task. I tell you what, Arnold, this has been a delightful conversation. It has.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And I hope we'll, and you know, it's one of the kind of conversations I love here at the Horn because it kind of goes all over the place.
Oh man, we were.
and that's awesome when it happens because, you know, everything has a relevance that somehow wraps back into itself, like that image of the, you know, the snake swallowing its tail. And
right.
it's awesome. Arnold, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too, Bob. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that was Arnold calling from Pennsylvania. Seriously, great call. And you know, he talks about other programs and stuff. I don't really know a lot of what goes on other programs. I see snippets and clips and things like that here and there. But I have a sneaking suspicion that what we're doing here really is as unique as I think it is. Just because I don't know, I don't, well, you know, with people who have ads to run, you know, that you can't do this. And you can't have this, you can't have the freeform dialogue. If you're on hold, and you are, stay there for a minute, please. And so, you know, when somebody like Lamar with the Silent R comes along and knocks down fundraising by, you know, by $100, and he did. That was who that was. He let me know and told me to tell y'all, and said hopefully it'll inspire other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation to help us knock out some of this, backlog. Well, it matters. Because this, you know, that's why there aren't 100 minutes of commercials out of 180 minutes of programming. That's why. Not that we could go get commercials. Come on. And big thanks also going out to Alma. Thank you, Alma. We have here, with 22 minutes to go in the program, we are down to only needing to raise tonight's amount of money, $200. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, etc. But we're there. And so that's not nearly as terrifying as it could have been. Thank you. Thank you to Paul and Charlene and Lamar and Alma. Thank you very, very, very kindly. And maybe, and hopefully others will step up now and we'll knock the rest of it out. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, somewhere in the wilds of South Carolina, Stan, there's Todd. Hey, Todd.
Bob, I'm on speaker. I don't know if it's bad or good. I don't know.
If it goes south, you know, I'll tell you.
Yeah, because the Bill's line does not work well for me at all.
Yeah, I understand.
But you know what? Suppose somebody was an idiot, and suppose you were a member of Congress. But I repeat myself.
Thank you, Mr. Twain.
You know, I had to switch it up a little bit. But yeah, Arnold was interesting. I'm wondering, is he over there in Allegheny or Butler County, somewhere over there?
Not sure. I know where, but I don't know if I'm at liberty to divulge.
Well, that makes sense. That's fine. Yeah, I'm figuring because I know Rick is like Western Pennsylvania. You know, I used to live. Pennsylvania, so.
No, Rick's not too awful far from Harrisburg.
Oh, I thought he was out. Okay.
No, he's in the Alabama part of Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's a big state, you know. Rick has got a strong voice. I remember one time I was listening to him, and he was talking about how he grew up in the projects. I don't know what he was talking about that night, but he doesn't always talk about how he came up, but he did that night.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very interesting. So anybody who's not listening to Rick Smith, you're missing out because he has a lot to offer.
Rick is real, real. And damn smart.
That's the thing. See, he knows it from the bottom to the top. He knows what's up. Yep. I mean, that's what I've seen, you know. You were talking about this dynasty that could be coming. You might be right. You might be right. So,
isn't that the natural progress of empire? Don't empires become dynastic after a while?
I'm just a little confused. Yes, but I'm confused because we're supposed to be set up not to have that.
Yeah, well, so was the Roman Republic. But you outgrow your structure.
Okay, granted, we have the bread and circus going very strongly right now. Granted, and the reason I say confused is that supposedly all this stuff is divested. And, you know, in the beginning he said, okay, I'm going to, you know, the MILF said he's going to divest his things to his children, but all his children and in-laws are in the White House.
Funny how that works, isn't it? And, of course, you know, Ivanka's sitting in a White House with a White House position of some sort, and suddenly she sits down to dinner with President Xi, and zing, suddenly clearance comes through on a whole bunch of exclusive brands in China.
See, I wasn't even going to bring this up, but you see, the Fourth Estate has let us down, and they let us down from the beginning to the end. Well, I won't say the end, but to this point, you know, and that's the way I feel about it, because the information about this guy has been out there forever. And it seems like the only person who's telling the truth is David K. Johnston, who used to write for the Inquirer.
Oh, no. You can't say anything nice about David K. Johnston, or I'll get another nasty note from Todd. Not you, different Todd, talking about how he's a sellout hack. Just telling
what?
People, yeah. David K. Johnson is just a sellout hack. Just telling people what any tax lawyer knows and making a fortune off of it. This is the kind of cranky shit that I get.
Well, anybody can say what they want, but that's bullshit. And I know for a fact. I grew up in Philadelphia. I've been reading that paper and New York Times my whole life.
Nah, okay, David K. Johnson got his Pulitzer out of a Cracker Jack box. Not worth a damn. Doesn't know nothing.
Well, you know.
I'm just saying.
I know. It's sad. So that's ridiculous. Well, anyway, that's ridiculous. And you know what I mean about the Fourth Estate, because they've known this nonsense about him. But now it's the grift. You know, I was scared of this. They're stealing as much as they can, as fast as they can. And you know, I have a problem with it. I really do. But, you know, you guys are talking about the building materials in Canada. And, you know, now that I live down here and I've got all this bamboo and whatnot in my yard, bamboo is amazing. It grows fast like hemp. And I've seen in Asia where they use it for scaffolding. And I'm not sure if Bhutan furniture is made of bamboo, but it sure looks like it.
You mean there aren't little rattan trees out there growing somewhere being clear cut? I'm being a smart ass.
Well, I do
Sorry.
Have. Yeah, that would be a good joke. Yeah, but you see, you know, I just don't. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. And so I don't know this guy. But the real reason I called is you know, you remember when Trump kept sniffing back during the debates?
Oh, yeah, his 1980s debate when it looked like he just roared through an 8-ball of Peruvian flake?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we remember, his biographer was convinced that he suffers from ADD. And, I mean, he said he couldn't sit still, he couldn't stay focused. I mean, all the classic signs of ADD. And if he's been like that from a child, maybe, you know, he's probably been on medication. And what they do is they give kids Ritalin, which is basically the same as Adderall. And if you look at the studies, chronic use of that will damage your brain terribly. So if he's been on that all of his life, well, let me back up. What happens is that, in other words, when you give children Ritalin, it speeds to adults, but it's depressant to children.
Well, and to some children, I mean, it's speed, and kids
right.
the calming effect is actually an idiosyncratic reaction to the drug. I mean, I'm not telling tales out of school, but once upon a time, it was suggested to us that we try it on Ferg when he was young, like, you know, third grade or so.
Sure.
So, okay, we did. He climbed the walls. I mean, it was speed. And it was mm-hmm. like, nope, not doing that anymore.
And it only took like two times, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thymus gland. See, that's the thing. This is the thymus gland, and it may have something to do with it because it changes how some medications work in children as opposed to adults. And you know, who knows? Our bodies are very complicated. But if he has been using that, I mean, I was always hyper. I was very hyper, and my father was adamant. You know, I come from a family of educators, and he was like, "Oh hell no," you know, no. And you listen to Dr. Peter Bragan, you know, he's definitely against it. But most doctors understand that. That's not a good thing. They only do that to ghetto kids mostly. Well, I won't say that because suburban kids, they use Adderall. But my point is that when he's been using that, something's going on because you crushed it. That's what I've seen. I remember in college kids were doing that. And I would query them, you know, questions like, well, it was like, oh, no, I've been on this since I was in fifth grade. You know, and I'm like, and they don't even know it. And I mean, they would be acting all skitsy and you know, like, I guess what the people call tweaking. That's the way they would act. And they would sell it for like $20 a pill.
Oh, it goes back far enough. I can remember a person who was had a standing script for Ritalin in like the sophomore year of college. And and sometimes would dump out two or three and crush them up, and folks would, perk right up,
right.
Especially around finals time.
Exactly.
Never understood the snorting part of it, but you know, who am I?
Well,
I've never been into speed. I never even liked a nasty ass caffeine buzz very much. So it was. The fascination was utterly lost on me.
Right. Well, yeah, that's totally understandable because when you look at the folks and like I said, they don't even they don't see it because it's subtle. It starts off slowly, like a lot of other addictions, and then you know they don't even understand. But they've got this long-standing prescription for it. You know, just like the young kids have Xanax and you know this and that. But my point is that after chronic use. In addition to his spirochetes, you know, he's paranoid. He's paranoid and something's wrong because that AP interview, I mean, his brains are scrambled eggs.
So you read it? You read it?
Oh, this is ridiculous. This is complicated.
And all the
this
parts where he apparently starts just sort of mumbling to himself, unintelligible.
Unintelligible. That's bullshit. This is the president. Come on, man. It's an interview. This is an interview.
How many interview transcripts were there with Barack Obama where he just sort of mumbled away into the distance?
But no, he's too professorial.
Oh, by the way, I might as well create another reason for somebody to send me shitty emails. Not real happy with Barack Obama right now.
Okay.
Not since I know, but you know, sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander. You know, he's an ex-president now, so he can go out and make his bankroll. And I understand that. Some ex-presidents make bank by going and vomiting on the Prime Minister of Japan. Others go and make bank some other way. Well, Barack Obama's on the speaking circuit now. I guess it was recently announced that he's going to be getting a $400,000 speaking fee for delivering an address to to the hedge funders over at Cantor Fitzgerald.
Cantor
Fitzgerald.
That would not be.
No. This is a nasty, slimy, evil, vile, old hedge fund.
Well, like, you know, we always knew he was, he's always been a corporate, you know, and I'm not surprised. And see, that's the thing. People just, the folks that hit the tractors.
Well, the thing that's the worst part of all of this is, well, okay, I don't know if I can fairly say it's the worst part, but he's getting the $400,000 for speaking at their health care forum. Now, Todd, I mean, let's just be clear here. If they're having a healthcare forum at Cantor King Fitzgerald, you can bet your ass that something like universal single-payer healthcare is not going to be a welcome idea.
That's not on the menu. That's lobby money, man. That's crazy. Well, maybe not lobby money, but that's it's not in the positive flow for us. No, that makes no sense. Well, it makes sense. I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm really not. He got the primer on the foundation scam. You know, he's got a foundation. So, you know, I don't know. We're in a bad way. But I don't see where we're going to have an honest politician, because blackmail is the order of the day. There's nothing private anymore. And if you think about it, because all our lies are out there, our papers and effects, as were descripted in the Constitution, are now electronic, and they're easily accessible. So, you know, the best thing to do is just be out front. Like, I'm going to be running for office around here, and I'm going to tell people, I'm going to be out front. Yeah, I smoke weed sometimes. So what? What's your problem?
Oh, and I'm sorry, I misspoke. I called them a hedge fund. They are described as a mid-sized investment bank. My bad.
They're trying to be low key about it. Well. Anyway, that's suspect. Very suspect. You know, that's very suspect. But
he'll take the $400,000 and give it all away. I mean, he did just sign a book deal for $65 million for him and Michelle to write their, you know, memoirs.
We'll see what happens. You know. By the way, you recommended some apple cider vinegar. I made a pork loin, last week, and you recommended that I add, for the acid, use that, and I had plenty of apple. I used Dr. Bragg's religiously, so I just put that in the meat, and it came out very nicely.
Oh, did it work?
Absolutely. In addition to what I had on there, yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like a mix of actual apple cider and apple cider vinegar. You get a kind of a sweet and sour thing going on.
That makes sense.
But the next thing we got to work on, we had, this is turning into some sort of reality program or something, I guess. Tracy checked in last night, and they had a tri-tip mishap over the weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Marinated it for 6 hours and everything, but it came out like shoe leather. I said the fire was not low nor slow enough. And
yeah, that's got to be low and slow.
And Sparky, of course, is a master of the tri-tip as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll have to solve that, because we can't have members of the Horn Family Community Congregation doing bad smoked food or being unhappy about it.
No, because
slow food is happy food.
Especially not with the grill that Tracy has. If she still has that really, really nice grill that she bought a couple of years ago. Oh, my God. Is that what she's using, you think?
I'm not sure. She wasn't real clear about it, but at me, I'm still crossing my fingers that at some point in time, I'm getting that acorn.
You got a Brinkman's right now?
Well, right now it's just a mess. I've got a burned out old disaster. You got to be real careful with that sucker. You can't walk
they
away from
out.
It. Oh, they do. This one rusted out in no time flat, no matter how much Krylon grill paint I put on it, did not matter.
Yeah, I got the little charbroil, and the tree hit it, and luckily I have an anvil. My grandfather was a blacksmith, and I have an anvil. I had to hammer this thing out, but I'm sold on that charbroil, man. It's made out of heavy gauge steel. They recommend, I keep it oiled
up. Like
now.
That Oklahoma, there's like... $100 difference between the Acorn and the Oklahoma Joe. And the Oklahoma Joe is some serious heavyweight, heavy gauge metal. And, offset firebox and everything. Shuts real nicely. Serious door on the serious door on the firebox.
Right.
But I like that Acorn because I like the idea of doing other stuff with it too, like getting that damn pizza stone.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
600-degree pizza crust, baby. Yeah.
Because it will stay hot. See, that's the thing. It will stay hot.
Yeah.
And it will get really, really hot.
Yeah, it's ceramic lined, so, exactly.
And it's like the green egg. Yeah, it's like the green
egg.
Well,
mm-hmm. it's based on the same principle. Hey, Todd, more time next time, I hope, man.
Hey, man, you know it.
All right, we'll talk soon.
All right.
All right, later. Bye now. Time to get out of here. Todd from South Carolina rounding out the program, getting the last word. Some great conversations tonight. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Clarity and Arnold and Todd. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening, and especially thanks to Lamar with the Silent R jumping in for the first time. Thank you very, very much indeed. We got $200 left to go in fundraising to get out of the hole. So tomorrow night, prayer meeting Wednesday, looks like we'll start up at $400, depending on what happens with the overnight crew. Thank you for TTV. He's gone up from third stage. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.